Today I want to speak about a subject I'm pretty certain you've heard before, because I think quite a few people have covered it. But still, it's an interesting section. The name of my sermonette is The Withered Fig Tree. The Withered Fig Tree. And some people have wondered many things about this section. Like why did Jesus pronounce a curse and so on. So what I want to do today is kind of clear up some of that and show you some of the lessons Jesus was teaching by that action. So if you turn to Mark 11, we're going to read all of Mark's account. This incident is in Matthew and Mark, and partially in Luke, I think. I'm going to stay basically in Mark's account. So Matthew 11, verse 12, it says, "Now the next day," and the previous verses show that he had gone to the temple and looked around and left. It says, "Now the next day, when they had come out from Bethany, he was hungry. And seeing from afar," and let me pause there a little bit, "seeing from afar," what does that mean? That means the fig tree that he saw was in the distance, and he couldn't see it clearly, but he could see it to some extent. "So seeing from afar a fig tree having leaves, he went to see if perhaps he would find something on it. When he came to it, he found nothing but leaves," nothing but leaves. And then Mark, the author, writes, "For it was not the season of figs." So that's an issue with some people. They say, well, Jesus came looking for figs, but it was not the season for figs. But let's go on, I'll answer that later. In response, Jesus said to it, "Let no man eat fruit from you ever again." And the disciples heard it. Then in Mark's account, he kind of leaves off the story there, and he brings in a different story, the cleansing of the temple. Now, Matthew handled it a different way. He handled the cleansing of the temple, and then he went through the fig tree incident. So it's a little different, but the details are still basically the same. In verse 15, it says, "So they came to Jerusalem. Then Jesus went into the temple and began to drive out those who bought and sold in the temple, and overturned the tables of the money changers, the seats of those who sold sold doves, and he would not allow anyone to carry wares through the temple." So he isolated three distinct problems there, maybe four you could say. But he saw in the temple that he did not like in his father's house, as he called it. The next verse, verse 17, "Then he taught, saying to them, 'Is it not written, my house shall be called a house of prayer for all nations, but you have made it a den of thieves.'" A den of thieves? What does he mean by that? A den of thieves. "And the scribes and the chief priests heard it and sought how they might destroy him. For they feared him, because of the people were astonished at his teaching. And when evening had come, he went out of the city." And then Mark picks up the story of the withered fig tree. And verse 20 of Matthew 11 says, "Now in the morning, as they passed by," that is Jesus and the disciples, "they saw the fig tree dried up from the roots." Important sentence there, dried up from the roots. "And Peter, remembering, said to him, 'Rabbi, look, The fig tree which you cursed has withered away." So people who read this and don't understand that the Bible is absolutely true find questions that they come up with. So I'd like to list a few of those. Number one, why expect figs when it was not the season for figs? Doesn't seem logical, does it? Was cursing the fig tree fair since it was not in season? It was not the season for figs. Another question, why not suggest digging and dunging it as Luke wrote in a parable in Luke 13? Why not dig it and dung it and wait for it to respond? That was the solution back in that parable. And the next question is, why curse a tree Jesus didn't own? Obviously, he didn't own this tree, and yet he pronounced a curse on it. So those are all questions that people have about this situation. And the last one, what is the purpose of the cursing? Jesus doesn't do anything without a reason. So there must have been a reason. So let me give you the overall answer in a short couple of sentences. I can tell you without doubt that no laws were broken, neither civil laws or God's laws in this incident. No custom was breached. Everything that was done was acceptable, legitimate, and proper. So that's the overall answer, but that doesn't give you many details as to why we can say that. So let's tackle the first question. Why did Jesus expect figs when it was not harvest time? Well, that one is it's kind of easy to answer. You know, people think, well, here Christ, who is the creator of the fig tree, made a mistake. No, not really. We know it was springtime. I'm not going to prove that to you in this short message, but it was springtime. And Jesus expected the spring crop. The modern term for the figs that appear in the spring, and every fig grower knows this. I mean, this is nothing new. This has been known for thousands of years. The modern name is, Breva, B-R-E-B-A. It looks like it should be Breva, but it's pronounced Breva. And I could go into the etymology of that, but it's not important. As I said, all people who cultivate figs know of that term, and they know about spring. The spring crop. Now, one thing about this Breva crop, it is never harvested. It has no commercial value whatsoever. People won't buy it. I mean, I suppose you could harvest it, take it to the market, and people say, I don't want any of those. First of all, they're very small. They're about the size of an olive. They never get much bigger. I don't think they taste that well, that good. they don't have much of a taste. But they do have a purpose. They are for the poor and the traveler. They're there for anybody to take if they want them, because they have no commercial value. They don't figure in the cultivation of another plant or any such thing like that. They have no commercial value. What normally happens is they ripen and they fall to the ground. If nobody comes and eats them, they fall to the ground and that's that. I suppose they find work as fertilizer. Anyway, we know that it was known, spring crop was known years and years and years ago. For example, the Song of Solomon, you don't need to turn there, I'm gonna read a few verses from Song of Solomon. Chapter 2 and verse 11 says, and some of this doesn't fit in, but I'm just proving the point about this known spring crop. For behold, the winter is past, the rain is gone, it has departed. The flowers are seen in the land. That's what he's talking about. He's talking about spring. The time of pruning has arrived. The voice of the turtle dove has been heard in our land. The fig tree has put forth its young figs. And I'm going to stop right there. It says the fig tree has put forth its young figs. And several different translations use a different word than young figs. They say green figs, and I think some say early figs. There was a Hebrew name for these figs, but I'm not sure they used it here. But anyway, the point is, they knew about the spring harvest, the spring crop of figs. That was nothing new. So the Bible, using the Song of Solomon, shows that it was known. So why didn't Jesus suggest digging and dunging it? Because that's a legitimate thing to ask, it sounds like, because the parable that Luke told. Well, the answer to that is coupled with the next question, was it fair to curse the fig tree because of the season? And then I've already shown you there was a spring crop. One thing I didn't point out in Song of Solomon, in verse 13 it says, the fig tree has put forth its young figs. Now, that verse, that sentence doesn't really tell us, but doing the research, you find out that the figs actually form before the leaves. And I think I'm getting ahead of myself here, but the reason why Jesus didn't say dig and dung it and give it a chance is that if the spring crop does not appear, that sends a signal to the owner, there's not going to be any harvest on this tree come fall. And the next year too, and the next year and next year. In other words, it signals that fig tree is either too old or it has disease or something's wrong with it. It's not going to produce. It is a barren tree. So that's why Jesus, one of the reasons Jesus cursed it, because it was hopeless. It would do no good. So therefore, he actually, almost more than a curse, it was just a statement of fact. Jesus knew that there would be no more figs on that tree forever. So we don't really know why the fig tree was barren, but it was. And I don't know if I pointed it out, but the verses I read, I think I did mention that. He said he saw the tree from afar. That means he was a good space away from it. So all he could see was leaves. So what that tells a person is that if there's leaves, there has to be this spring crop of figs, because they appear before the leaves. They appear first and the leaves appear afterward. So the leaves is a signal that there is a crop of figs here. But of course, we find that there was none, so the tree was a little bit deceptive, wasn't it? Okay, the question, how come Jesus cursed a fig tree that didn't belong to him? That does seem a little odd, doesn't it? It's not odd, really. Matthew 21:19, we're not going to turn there, says, in the same account, it says, and seeing a fig tree by the wayside. What does that mean? That means the fig tree was very likely a wild tree, because that happens very often in the Fertile Crescent. They grow wild. And this tree apparently was alongside the road in the area that belonged to no one. So it was growing wild, very, very likely it was wild. But even if it were not wild, would it be wrong for Jesus to eat the figs? No, there wouldn't have been nothing wrong with that. During that time, and of course it's not so much that way today, during that time, anybody would be welcome to eat this crop, because as I said, it has no commercial value at all. In addition to that, remember when the disciples were walking through a grain field and they took some grain and ate it? The Pharisees didn't complain about them eating it or harvesting it. Well, they complained about that, but they complained about them breaking the Sabbath, not stealing grain. So there's no, God is always concerned about the poor, always, always. When ancient Israel was to harvest a crop, they were to leave some there. Remember the book of Ruth. So anyway, let's move on. What was the purpose for Jesus cursing that tree? We already know that the tree was barren, so he didn't really need to curse it to make it not produce. That was the foregone conclusion, that it was not going to produce anymore. Well, what Mark has done, you know, Mark, in Mark's gospel, he splits the stories up and he places the cleansing of the temple right in the middle of the cursing of the fig tree story. So Mark is kind of signaling us, or at least I think he is, and I think a few commentators believe the same way. He was signaling that they are very closely related. You know, God told Israel in Exodus 19, we're not going to turn there, but in Exodus 19, just before they received the Ten Commandments, God told Israel that they would become, if they would obey him, they would become a kingdom of priests. Now, a kingdom of priests has the duty, a priest is basically a teacher, but also being a kingdom of priests and living God's way, they would be an example to all the world, all the nations around them. They would be an example. The problem is, they didn't do it. They just did not follow through. And here we find they're actually the most holy place in all of Israel was the temple, and here they had defiled that miserably. So let's reread Matthew 11, verse 15. So they came to Jerusalem. Then Jesus went to the temple and began to drive out those who bought and sold. Think of that. They're buying and selling in the temple. They're not supposed to do that. That's not a place to handle that kind of business. Then it says, and overturned the tables of the money changers. What's wrong with that? Well, there's lots wrong with that. And the seats of those who sold doves. So Jesus isolates these problems. The money, here's what happens with the money changers. People of Israel had to pay a temple tax every year, and it was a set amount, and it had to be a certain coin. It had to be a coin, for example, that had no Roman image on it. It had to be certain coins. So when people came to the temple to pay their tax, if they had a coin that was the wrong kind, then they had to change it to the money changers. Did the money changers do it in a fair way? Absolutely not. They did not. They charged a fee, and they were cheating the people is what they were doing. That's why Jesus said they are, it's a den of thieves. Same thing with the doves. When people are poor in ancient Israel, usually you could sacrifice a dove, even though maybe it required something else. So they brought doves to be sacrificed, and very often, not always, but very often, the ones who had inspected a dove said, well, this dove is not right. It has this, that, or the other thing wrong with it. So that's okay, we'll sell you another dove. And so they sold them a dove that had already been passed. So all of that was not the way it should have been. That was all wrong. That's why Jesus called his house a den of thieves. It says, my house shall be called a house of prayer for all the nations, but you have made it a den of thieves. And I was thinking I should maybe give you some references of them actually doing that. And Alfred Edersheim writes a lot, has written a lot of information about this, but I mean, I don't really have to prove it because Jesus said it. He said it was a den of thieves. So we know that all those things that he mentioned were not being done correctly. So what does all of this have to do with you and I? You and me, I should say. In effect, the temple was so corrupted it was not really a place of worship. It was not something that all the nations around looked up to, because they likely knew what was going on there. It was not a place to look up to. It was not an example at all. So here's some of the symbolism that you can gain from the fig tree. A good fig tree represents sustenance, but a barren tree is useless. It's useless. And if you and I are not bearing fruit, let's hope that we're not useless. The fig tree promised food by having leaves, but had none. So in a way, it was misrepresenting itself, like the scribes and the Pharisees misrepresented themselves. You know, Jesus called them whitened sepulchers, and because on the outside they looked so righteous, but inside, he said, it was dead man's bones. So what's the lesson for us? You know, you could go to Galatians 5 and read some of the fruits of the Spirit. And you and I should be working on those fruits and exhibiting those fruits to the world at large, to our friends, to our neighbors, to our family, to our church brethren. We should be representing those fruits, else we will wither and die away.